1985. The world is grappling with the specter of Cold War tensions, and the United States finds itself entangled in a complex web of secrets and deceit. Amidst the chaos of multiple geopolitical battlegrounds, a clandestine alliance begins to take shape, orchestrated by a shadowy network of government officials, covert operatives, and rogue personalities. The CIA became the conduit for which a stream of illegal weapons and drugs would move across the borders of countries into the hands of rebel forces and terrorist groups. As congressional investigations would shed light on these blatantly illegal activities, at least one reporter attempted to make the deeper connection into the crack cocaine epidemic plaguing the inner cities of the U.S. This case file joined the theorists as they take to the slopes and catch a few speedballs with spooks in Drug Wheeling and Dealing in the CIA.
Welcome to Alien Theorist Theorizing Case File 287, Drug Dealing and Wheeling with the CIA. I'm Braden.
I'm Zell.
I'm Dan.
And I'm Andrew.
Some might call them the world's biggest drug dealers.
Yeah.
If you look on Reddit.
Yeah. Oh yeah, dude, there's nothing better than going on a deep dive.
Reddit's great.
I actually found a cool Reddit page that like is run by people that are like, it's like they, I wish I had the page name with it, but it's like people are like, let's look at conspiracy theories rationally. And so they always spell out these conspiracy theories and then go with the rational theories. And then almost within five comments, it's devolved to fucking absolute insanity again. There is no taking it rationally. I love it. They always give it their best. And
it's
then,
the shill. You get called the shill, all the names, and all of a sudden it's back down.
Yeah.
Downvote, like army of downvotes.
I mean, this one is, we're going to be talking a little bit about the CIA and...
a lot about the CIA.
Journalism and you know, if you're interested in some other fucking absolute bonker shit the CIA has done, I mean, we've done other case files and we have a ton on our Patreon bonus content, ton of confidentials on just...
whole bunch of
ridiculous CIA operations.
The biggest one being that we know of that we did the case file on being CIA mind control. And ventured into Canada as well.
Yeah.
And that one was actually proven.
COINTELPRO, Artichoke, Midnight Climax, like the list goes fucking... FBI.
Yeah, it's more FBI, but it's Operation Sea Spray... fucking Gladio, Operation Gladio. There's so many.
So when one comes around, it's hard to be like, well, they would never do that. At first glance, no matter what it is. You just look back, they did this and this and this and this. So I don't know. I'm going to have a look at it at least.
And honestly, looking in this one, because we're talking about the CIA, their dealings with the Contras and, you know, Gary Webb, the journalist, what the really overarching things that I was like, kind of scared me with parallels with what's happened like in today in recent times is that like the amount of influence these three letter agencies had on major news outlets, right? To like pressure them, persuade them to kill stories because, you know, inevitably that's what happened and they destroyed this guy's life.
I mean, you know? It's the story is eerily, familiar to Danny Casaleros as well.
Yeah, but, but they don't have a cool syndicate like the Octopus Syndicate.
The Octopus Syndicate, yeah.
Right? CIA. Like, that's a cool name. That's like honestly, you could have put Tom Cruise in Mission Impossible, the Octopus Syndicate, and, you know, he'd sell $1 billion.
Casler doesn't even have a movie. Fucking Jeremy Renner plays fucking Gary Webb in a movie.
That's right. I forgot that there was a movie about this, about his story. What is it?
Kill the Messenger?
Don't kill him. Kill the Messenger.
Kill the Messenger.
Yeah, I forgot about that. I fucking liked that movie.
It was a good movie.
Anyways, for this one, we obviously got to take it back a little bit to give you a little background information. So why don't we get into what the CIA may or may not been hands-on or hands-off dealing with?
Well, I mean, they were actually involved during the 1980s. I mean, pretty
Eric
big,
Dan said
pretty big
100%
deal.
100% involved.
Well, hey, listen, involved you're hearing it Nicaragua. From CIA Dan, so it's
I mean, they were heavily involved in Nicaragua. Everybody knows that. There are multiple congressional committees and investigations into the CIA's involvement. And it was in the fucking news. It almost killed Reagan's career as a politician. Like, it almost killed his presidency. So everybody kind of knows that the CIA was involved in supporting the Contras or the rebel group that was fighting against the Sandinista government of Nicaragua at the time. So the Sandinistas, which officially known as the Sandinista National Liberation Front, or FSLN, came to power in 1979 after they basically, like, took over the
They overthrew a dictator.
Yeah, they overthrew the dictator, which was...
U.S.-backed.
U.S.-backed dictator. And then the after they overthrew that, the Sandinistas took power, and then the Contras arose as a counter-revolutionary group, and then they were formed to oppose the Sandinista government based on their
the U.S. Differing- is like it's much more enjoyable for us as a country if we have a dictator in this location. So we're going to go ahead and fund. Rebels to see if we can kind of get back to how things were.
Well, the Sandinistas were pretty much hitching their cart to the kind of the Cuban, like the Cubans, like they were kind of modeling their kind of revolution after the communist Cuban revolution. And they were kind of hitching their ride with the Soviet Union, kind of being like, we're going to institute communist socialist government style, and that we're going to do these things, and that, you know, we want to model ourselves after these communist governments. USA is like, we can't have another communist stronghold in Central America.
But we can
America.
Have a dictatorship.
Yeah, pretty much.
Loyal dictatorship.
Real quick, pop question. You have to choose one or the other, a dictatorship or communism/socialism.
Okay, how long do we have? Because that's going to take a really long time to explain. So after this, yeah, you have Ronald Reagan, who is elected president of the United States. He takes office in 1981. The U.S. government is already kind of pretty much heavily invested in the Contras already. They've already kind of
They made a video game about them. Like, let's be honest here. They're fucking huge. Yeah. It was awesome.
It's the hardest game you've ever played.
Interesting. It's like, obviously you were doing something in the region, like outside the Cold War, there was something beneficial to having a puppet government in there for you. What they were doing, I don't know, but they're probably shipping out resources on the cheap to the states. Probably. There was probably something beneficial to having a dictator installed rather than just like, you know, it was the Cold War play. We could, you know, looking at the risk checkerboard, we had to make sure it wasn't just one of theirs.
Of course it's going to be beneficial to have a guy with your hand up his ass controlling his mouth.
Yeah.
The U.S. had already kind of taken from this playbook in a couple other countries, especially in Southeast Asia.
They fucking wrote the playbook, Dan. What do you mean? This is a chapter in the playbook. They're like, how to fuck up countries, 101.
They're fresh off not too long after their events in Vietnam.
Right. So it's like, yeah, and they also how that kind of rolled out. We're like, okay, yeah, we'll just do that again.
They're like, this time we've learned from our mistakes.
We've learned from our great mistakes, and we shall win this
time. Well, they learned that time to not get directly involved in it. So now we're just going to fund
war by proxy.
Contras. We're going to go full proxy, and we're not going to set in stuff.
That's growth. That's growth.
While the Reagan administration is kind of covertly funding, not really covert, because it's pretty much Reagan pledged to support any type of kind of counter-communist forces
total anti-communism. Yeah.
Here's a question here. Now, because I had read that the previous dictatorship not very good for the people, was there propaganda or allegations that this new government, the Sandinistas, that they were like committing atrocities? Were they all that bad, or was it just that they weren't, You know, they're the commies, US kind of flavor.
I mean, there are allegations. Commies. Well, there are allegations leveled against them by the anti-Sandinistas. Sandinistas were saying that they were oppressing or repressing the.
It's not biased at all.
Well, no. They wanted to. one of their policies was they wanted a single party system. They don't want any other parties. Like
they want the party.
Yeah. They want the party.
You so want to
that's
join
a dictatorship, and we already know these states loves a dictatorship.
No. What's dictatorship is one person,
one ruler.
Party, a single party system. That's just a single.
It's
party.
Just a dictatorship. Well, somebody's got to rule the party. Yeah.
Well, they don't have like a singular. No, a dictatorship is like
they're like that's they're how like it what's starts. The problem? We're modeling our system after the states. Why are you so mad at us?
Well, we had two systems. We have two parties.
We had a two-party system.
It's all the same. It's all the same party.
Communism always ends in a dictatorship as well.
Yes.
It's all for the people until a few people say, we'll manage for the people, but we'll be the people to manage it. And then there's the inner party and then everyone else.
Yeah.
So there were allegations kind of on both sides of that kind of, on that conflict where each group was kind of accusing the other of being like, okay, you guys are doing this, you're doing this, but one side is not communist. And so that's the side that, and one side is the communist. States. So that's the side that the states decided to back. Now,
I say the states, I guarantee you Canada was supporting. We were like right behind the states. Like,
yeah, of course. Well, we were also fucking puppets too, buddy.
Yeah.
Technically it wasn't really the states because it really was just the Reagan administration. So the Reagan administration was supporting them because Congress tries to stop them. So Congress steps in and passes the Boland Amendment in December of 1981, which it is expressly prohibiting the U.S. government from funds to support the Contras, like the counter-revolutionary forces in Nicaragua. Like it says that in the wording. So specifically, in Nicaragua, like, you cannot use funds.
Mind
that
your own fucking
you
business is what it
exactly.
says.
Exactly. And that's fuck. Yeah, that's it makes so much sense. You're like, listen, why? Like, why are we destabilizing and funding rebel groups? That's not what we should be doing. Like, if just any sound person would be like, doesn't sound like a good idea. Like, is it like we should just
yeah,
leave them.
This is how checks and balances are supposed to work. So the Congress steps in and they say, no, you're not going to spend any more of the government monies, you know, fomenting revolution in to overthrow another country's, you know, to interfere in another country's like sovereignty. Like you shouldn't be doing that.
It's fine because Reagan had his fingers crossed behind his hands. Like he was behind his back. Like,
bust out the black checkbook, boys.
Essentially, yes. So in 1982, despite them passing the Boland Amendment, the Reagan administration officials are pretty much told, I mean, it's reported that Reagan is pretty much telling them to do whatever it takes to stop communism from spreading to Central America. Like, doesn't matter what it means. Doesn't matter what you have to do.
That's a crazy thing because if we know anything about the CIA, is if you give them the leeway of whatever it takes, they go, oh yeah.
Yeah.
No
next thing you know,
whatever.
They're sitting behind a fucking two-way mirror fucking watching guys bang fucking strippers on LSD. Yeah,
two guys clinking coffee mugs, whatever it takes.
So in the years following, about 1985, it's like an opportunity. The Reagan administration starts secret negotiations with Iran to secure the release of some American hostages that were being held by Iranian-backed groups in Lebanon. And the kind of the plan was that, hey, we're going to earmark some money, or we're going to like basically earmark some money so we can take that money and then give it to these Iran guys to negotiate the release of these prisoners. We're going to give it to them so they can buy weapons.
Well, did they not directly trade F-14 parts to Iran?
Well, weapons and money. Like
during an embargo?
So yeah.
when Iran was an active fucking enemy of the U.S.?
And yeah,
dollar.
And then they held American hostages
like,
for 444 days.
Pin.
Yeah, this is why they kept it secret for a while.
Fucking
this is why
crazy.
They didn't tell anybody. And so when they earmarked this money, what the CIA did was actually like funnel off a good chunk, almost half, if more than half of that, like $30 million that they had earmarked to send to for the Iranian hostages. They took that money and then siphoned it off to use it to go ahead and fund the Contras in spite of the Bullet Amendment, which had been passed. So, in spite of a congressional order, like
in their defense, someone
is not treason,
had written,
Dan. Is it treason?
I mean, it's not treason, but it's like
closest you can get in a democracy. I mean,
you're violating a congressional order. Like it's
even worse because when you look at, like, supposedly Reagan was in secret talks with Iran before his election to make sure that they didn't release any of those hostages too soon.
I mean,
in order to fucking
be treason because we're not at war.
But he literally sabotaging Carter's fucking chance at re-election by organizing a fucking secret pact with Iran. Like, how is this guy? How did this guy not get fucking impeached?
He starved his own citizens. It's a little bit longer so he could win presidency.
This is a way bigger deal than Watergate. Yeah. Like, way bigger.
I mean, Reagan was in pretty hot water after this, after people found out. Because once they found out about the secret negotiations, too, because it was like a Lebanese newspaper that kind of
that
shot
leaked
out,
it.
That leaked the details of the arms deal. And then everybody found out about it. And then it's like, Reagan was in, the Reagan administration was in pretty hot water after that. So
just pretty hot. They
whatever
did fine.
It takes.
Whatever it takes. They came out on top though in the end.
They're like in Iran giving them guns. They're looking at you, whatever it takes. That was their motto back then.
I mean, yeah, CIA, essentially pretty
whatever
much.
Whatever it takes.
During the rise of communism, that was pretty much
whatever it takes.
That was the ideological cart
that was the battle
the U.S. had kind of hitched itself to. It's been like,
here's
whatever
my question.
It takes to get to stop communism from spreading. Like, we have to do
on those on those failed fucking attempts to rescue those hostages out of Tehran. Did we lose any soldiers?
Canada.
No.
We said we. I'm like,
well, you know what I mean?
Like, this isn't the royal we.
We are
the royal we.
Canada is the states. The states isn't Canada.
Yeah. Like, did we lose it? Like, we had failed attempts at trying to fucking recover those hostages, right? All knowing this entire time that Reagan's got a fucking sneaky deal to get these guys back as soon as he's elected.
We're trying to, like, without having to spend a bunch of money.
That's fucking crazy to me.
This is what kind of foments the beginning of the entire Iran-Contra affair, which people know, you've probably heard about. If you haven't, it's a very interesting point in time and historical event. So this is where you have, in November of 1985, the U.S. National Security Council staffer, Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North, who is a very polarizing character throughout the Iran-Contra affair.
You mean Fall Guy.
Alleged fall guy. He's one of the people that comes forward saying that, you know, he kind of authorized and facilitated the entire thing of having the siphoning off that money. The money from the sales of weapons to Iran, then taking that money and giving it to the CIA for them to go ahead and use to meddle in other countries.
Iran is an enemy. So potentially those weapons are being used against American soldiers.
Well, I'm pretty sure they were when they foiled the rescue attempts on those fucking hostages.
So in 1986, so early 1986 in January, after that, the news story breaks from the Lebanese magazine Ash-Shara, the U.S. kind of the Reagan administration initially denies everything. They say, no, we didn't know anything about this. Like, we have no idea what's going on. But once the stuff kind of gets out and starts getting verified by independent sources and other media, and it starts picking up steam, the Reagan administration has to come out and say, oh okay, you got us, kind of.
Oops.
And then also, like, in November, you have a CIA contracted plane that is shot down over Nicaragua, which is transporting supplies to the Contra. And then that is another, you know, that just that throws
it's another domino.
Throws some more wood on the fire because you're like,
That sounds like something we do, but I don't know if it was us. Maybe, we don't know. I caught him red hand. They're like handing off gums.
Hand in
the plane
jar,
on the
buddy.
Side said, whatever it takes.
Got a big picture of Reagan on there. It's fucking.
So through 86 and 89, so those 3 years, like, multiple investigations are launched into this Iran-Contra affair by Congress and the media. And they go and they follow all the a lot of the threads and kind of reveal the extent of these operations that the Reagan administration was holding. And then, you know, a lot of these are in looking to be potentially in violation of U.S. law, the Boland Amendment, which is the law. So it's like, yeah, they're breaking the law. It's not treason, but they're breaking the law.
Close to. As close as you can get.
I mean,
it's not treason not because they
listen. Yeah. You have to be a war in a country to commit treason.
That's what I mean. It's as close as you can get because they're
like,
war.
Hey, we're semantics.
Yeah, it is. I mean, the entire kind of Iran Contra stuff was semantics because, like, they were sending money. Like, they were sending money because it was like a loophole. Like, they were like, "Yeah, you guys didn't necessarily say that. You know, it was only money.
You didn't say we couldn't illegally sell.
Yeah, like it's not from the defense. It's not from the defense budget. It's coming it was during from an embargo, guns,
so it is illegal.
We whatever.
Is like, it yeah, not? Technically, it's during the embargo. Yeah, it's illegal.
Yeah,
so there's no loophole. It's
they're
it's
like legal. Embargo, shimbargo. Who cares?
Well, it's like where they're kind of like giving them money to buy weapons. So it's like we're not.
No, they gave them F-14 parts too.
So
it's
the,
just the parts in case they shoot
yeah,
down.
Yeah, it's just the parts. It's not the weapons. They yeah, still have to put them together. Like,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So we're it's not. Like we we're did. Not.
It's just parts. If they put them together in an F-14, that's not on us.
That's fine.
You could argue that.
Wallah, Habibi, Wallah. Just give us part. There, yeah. We will not use him. Give us part. We will build it. No problem. Huh?
They're like, hey, listen, we want F-14s. They're like, all right, we will send them disassembled with no instructions. They're like,
yeah, they figure it out. Then, hey, like,
yeah, hey, that's not on us. Yep. We sent a pile of nuts and bolts. That's
a metal. A disassembled F-14 has never killed anybody. Like, you know, it's like,
like all we sent was a box of parts, and they're like, yeah, but that box of parts was specifically you could put into an F-14. Well, sure you could. You could build whatever you wanted with it.
Yeah, no shit. So yeah, once you get through a lot of congressional committees and a lot of one of them is the Kerry Committee report in 1989, which is.
And if you watch, you can on YouTube, you can watch some of these hearings and stuff on this stuff. And like some of them get pretty heated. Like God, people are fucking choked.
Yeah, it's part of Congress's thing to oversee a lot of the stuff for the CIA, like that's the job of a lot of the intelligence committees, and that's why we have them. And there's a reason we have every year there's a fiscal meeting about the funding.
We have officially investigated ourselves and found us guilty of nothing.
Well, technically, so no. Congress isn't themselves.
It's all like, the same shit. They all have their greasy little fingers applied.
It's funny. In one of the congressional hearings that I watched, I can't remember her name now, but it's her turn to speak, and she's like asking about checks and balances, and the representative from the CIA is like, "We're investigating that claim, and we're going to look into it." She's like, "How can you look into yourself?"
Yeah, no shit.
She's like, you already lied about everything here. Everything here has been a lie. You cannot look into yourself. And he's like, we'll look into that. Yeah. I was like, that's phenomenal.
Technically, well,
whatever it takes.
The role of investigation is supposed to fall under the Office of the Inspector General of the CIA, which is supposed to be an independent investigatory like body.
It's
internal affairs, like for the U.S., right. Like for the cops. Yeah. Like it's kind of, that's what they're supposed to do.
Yeah, it works.
So
it's probably flawless.
Yeah. I mean, is there another system I'm not aware of that should
suspended
be instituted?
With pay.
Like, yeah. Is there a better way to do it?
Probably.
You're asking fucking not three asking us in the wrong podcasters. Guy, so
yeah, I think, well, how do you guys, probably, how do you guys do it? How do your,
we actually our, so the RCMP, how they, we have a civilian board called the IAO that's independently hired. That's non, like,
well, that's what the inspector general is. It's like they're supposed to be
inspector general.
The inspector general, like, oh, that's what they're supposed to do. Like, they're supposed to be independent.
He's not voted.
They're not. Yeah, they are voted on. Like, they are like appointed. They usually have like a special counsel that is like appointed. And
John Kerry, he's never had any political aspirations, anything like that. So like, he doesn't want to have important friends or like, that makes sense.
Yeah.
He's a good person to have there. That's good.
Yeah, it seems like if you were appointed to this thing and voted on, it's like, you could easily muck up your career.
Absolutely.
If you were like, yeah, you're like the CIA, they were doing what? Yeah. You know what? I should take a stance against them.
No. Well, we know of one guy that kind of did and didn't work out so well for him, but yeah. We'll get into that later.
You're getting mad at the CIA and they're like, you're just a regular JFK, aren't you? Whatever it takes.
So after these commit, so it all kind of comes out, it all comes spilling out. Iran-Contra affair happens. The people that get convicted, you have Oliver North, and then like one of the other, what's his name? Poindexter.
That's his actual name. Like that's his
Poindexter.
Name.
Like yeah, Poindexter.
Well, these guys obviously did hard time for this, right? Like obviously.
Well,
these
guys, it's like, so yeah, you had Oliver North, you had National Security Advisor John Poindexter, and then like, I think it was like five high up CIA officials, and then like a couple of other maybe like CIA contractors.
No, I'd imagine Reagan would really want to put the hammer down on these guys to make an example out of them, for you're making like, him look bad, right?
That's not what I meant.
I wanted nothing to do with this. This is un-American. You're supporting our fucking, you know, our enemies during an embargo, right?
Well, that's what the power of the presidential pardon comes into play, and the Reagan administration decides to pardon a lot of these convicted or people implicated in the Iran-Contra affair.
So what a fucking insane, like that is an insane power to wield, that you can make orders for people to do these fucking insane things that are, hey, they're not breaking any rules technically. And then you'd be like, when some they get charged, you're like, no, that was totally not above board, not okay, charges. And then you're like,
You're telling me all good. Fucking Oliver North and Poindexter there got pardoned, but Joe Exotic couldn't get a pardon? Like, come
on. What the fuck is this?
He did nothing.
Yeah, the sale of
you can't
cats
call
is
some
much,
crazy
much
cat lady
now.
A cunt anymore? What the hell?
Can't be in violation of big cat laws, and like, that's a lot more serious offense than trading under an embargo.
Dan, it's funny you say that, but from the outside looking in, it is. Big cat laws are more held
in higher
and
regard.
Higher regard than international crime.
So in the years after Iran-Contra, even though the Iran-Contra affair did have a very negative impact, like I think it saw like the biggest single day, like the single day drop in like a presidential approval rate for Reagan. I mean, he still left office with one of the highest approvals of any president after that.
That's crazy.
But the saga doesn't really end there, because the kind of the suspicion of the CIA would follow it into the mid-90s, where in August of 1996, we have everybody's favorite investigative journalist, Gary Webb, comes
out. Gary Webb.
This is...
I'm even madder now, because you look at that fucking Jimmy Carter out there, 90 million years old, building houses, just a good old guy, and he gets fucked over by Reagan, doing greasy-ass shit. Like, come on.
And I mean, it's quite interesting that all this goes on. You're just like, it's like a cloud of like, holy fuck. All right. Well, at least we're done with this, right? We're out of this chapter of the United States. Like, I'm just dealing with this. And then you have Gary Webb's three-part series, The Dark Alliance. He's a journalist working for the San Jose Mercury News.
Oh, we want to get into this?
Yeah.
Okay.
Of course. Before we do, should we get into the break?
Sure.
Okay. Have a good time?
Yeah, sure.
Let's do it.
Can't take it back. Let's go. Break time.
Break.
You're back.
We'll be right back.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/RS10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/RS10 today.
Back to school savings are officially in session at Tanger Outlets. Shop the latest school styles with an extra 25% off during Tanger Style, our biggest sale of the season, now through August 25th. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
We're back. As we just left off, we were talking about Gary Webb. So Gary Webb worked for the San Jose Mercury News. He releases a part one of an article that basically, you know, we just talked about how, you know, the United States, the Reagan administration was dealing with foreign countries such as Iran to do arms deals to fund the Contras. And this article that Gary Webb writes, Dark Alliance, it basically alludes that the CIA was either involved. He doesn't actually say the CIA, but he alludes pretty strongly whether the CIA was...
CIA or either like ex-CIA or a small group of rogue CIA, I think is actually what he alludes to.
Either was complicit or just turned a blind eye to basically these drug dealers funneling crack cocaine into the United States to fund the Contras, to further fund the Contras.
Yeah, so like if you want it straight from Gary's mouth, he basically states that for the better part of a decade, the San Francisco Bay Area drug ring sold tons of cocaine to the Crips and Blood street games of Los Angeles and funneled millions in drug profits to Latin America guerrilla armies run by the U.S. Central Intelligence Agencies. This drug ring opened the first pipeline between Colombia's cocaine cartels and the black neighborhoods of Los Angeles. And as a result, the cocaine that flooded in helped spark a crack explosion in urban America.
Right. And I mean, that's pretty well documented that, you know, the government was systematically targeting poor communities with these kind of drugs. And it's like one of the things that like instantly when I was looking at this thing, I thought like just by turning a blind eye and allowing this to go on. And it's like, it's not that they were like, hey, go here, but they were like directing local law enforcement off supply routes and stuff so that these deals could take place and the drugs could get where they needed to go.
Go ahead.
And you got something about crack cocaine?
Well, yeah, I just kind of wanted to go in. Like, I think it's kind of important to understand why this was such an epidemic and like why it went so fucking crazy, you know, at the time. Because like,
cocaine's a hell of a drug.
Well, yeah, especially crack. Like Zell said, especially crack. Because so basically, with cocaine, it's actually cocaine hydrochloride, which the hydrochloric chloride portion of the cocaine is a salt, which is a base. So it's unsmokable, right? So in order to make it smokable, you got to remove the salt, which is called freebasing for the most part, which turns out to be extremely dangerous, a la Richard Pryor. So, you know, obviously you have to heat it up to like a massively hot temperature, but to create the vapors. But later they ended up developing sodium bicarbonate, which is baking soda, to remove the hydrochloride from the cocaine and then creates the little fucking crystals, which you can smoke. And the, you know, when you smoke them, it makes a cracking sound.
Smoke
and that's
rock.
Where they got the name fucking crack. But like, why, what was the goal here? Like, why did crack explode the way it did? One of the biggest things about crack is the fact that it's immediately absorbed into your bloodstream. Like we're talking, you're high in 5 to 15 seconds, like bang. Right.
And that's when you see the crack, like when you see like a crackhead, that's like when they're like, that's like someone when they're completely as like hunched over.
Yeah.
And no, just, not necessarily. That's a lot of people are on the nod when they're fucking hunched over like that.
And like when they're like
startled and come on.
They're sitting upright, but their head is like completely down. So I don't know how they stay upright.
Pardon me. What?
I don't know how they stay upright.
What are you fucking, these guys, I don't know how they have, you see them, they're all fucking jacked. They all got abs.
They got fucking solid cores.
But yeah, like so you're high within seconds of taking this. And it basically, you took cocaine, which at in the 80s and 90s, cocaine was a rich man's drug. And all of a sudden, you're cooking this fucking, you're taking your cocaine, you're cooking it, which is creating way more product, right? You're taking fucking, let's say, $500 worth of cocaine and turning it into $2,500 worth of fucking crack. And you're taking a rich man's drug and turning it into a poor man's drug. Because you can buy, back then you could buy a rock of fucking crack for fucking $5.
Right? It's crazy to me too, because one of the things that I was looking up is that when I was reading articles about addiction and stuff, just because I was curious about this, because immediately when I started to read this and I was like, how bad that epidemic was, like crack is so fucking addicting.
Well, you're chasing that first high.
Yeah.
And you'll never get it, but they're willing to fucking do whatever it takes to get that first eye back.
Whatever it takes. You do that on purpose, you son of a bitch.
Yeah. Now it's, they're like, for the country.
Whatever it takes.
Now it's like, crack and that kind of stuff has only gotten more potent over the years. Like,
and more potent, toxic, more strong. Too.
And what we've seen is some of the statistics is like, if you have a parent that was an addict, is or was an addict, your chances of having addiction issues in your life are 70%. It's fucking crazy. That's crazy. If you've had
specifically drugs though, right? Like alcohol is 50%.
They say 50% if you had one or both parents battle addiction.
Now, but you're like, these kids are growing up in these, these addiction environments, right? Which is creating trauma. And what do you use to treat the trauma when you're poor? What do you do to treat trauma when you're poor? Drugs. You can't afford
drugs,
medication.
Baby. Using drugs.
No.
Right? Like you're just perpetuating this fucking cycle of addiction.
It's crazy because like I can see a parallel of like the absolutely massive addiction issues we have today. Going right back to these events here, it's like these people are chasing, cheaper highs, better highs. We need stronger drugs, and it just slowly transitions to what's cheaper, what's stronger. Like they're chasing that high,
fentanyl.
And to now, it's like now we're into fentanyl, right? It's like this operation of allowing, whether the CIA was directly involved or they turned a blind eye, has spread like a cancer through all of North America into like this unbelievable addiction issues we have today. And it's not like people are like, oh, this is crazy. The addiction issues just popped up. They never just popped up. They were slowly boiling up since the 80s, right? Of these hard drugs and people getting really addicted to these poor communities that don't have access to healthcare and stuff and don't have access to resources for rehabs and stuff being addicted to these hard drugs. And we're just seeing that we're reaping what we sowed from the early 80s.
And you know what else, what part of this that we don't also talk about too is the other side of the addiction and the fucking addiction to money that the dealers that are getting as well. Huge. And what did these dealers do once they got money? Because before, most of these guys were just poor kids.
Sent it right to the Contras, baby.
No, but not only that, but they're poor street kids. And all of a sudden, I'm making all this money. Well, what do I need to do? I need to protect myself. And now I have money. So what am I going to do to protect myself with this money that I got? Well, I can afford guns now.
I got guns.
Right? Yeah. So I got to protect my choice. And now all of a sudden we have this explosion in fucking gun violence and, street level gun violence. It's like this kickstarted just fucking absolute misery.
Yeah. And I think it's a direct, you can directly link the problems today from the 80s. I was like, this is fucking crazy. Cause I was seeing so many parallels when I was reading and I was like, man, this is just the same issue that we've had since then. Just been like, it'll get better. And it never has. And you just have other interests feeding into the beast that is addiction. The crazy thing is when Gary Redd wrote this article, and it came out, like, obviously heads are turning. They're like, wait, what? Like, this is fucking insane.
Yeah, do you want to get into, like, the content of the article a little bit?
Let's do it. Let's hear it.
So, the series focused on three men. Freeway Rick Ross.
Yeah, fucking right?
Not the Rick Ross that we know with
his
pants.
You can watch interviews with this guy. He's a fucking beauty. They say he might be the first ever crack cocaine millionaire.
Yeah. I think he is. I thought that's what I heard was that he was.
That's he was labeled.
And then like, Oscar.
Huge drug dealer.
Oscar Danilo Blandon and Norwin Menendez. Ross was a major drug dealer in Los Angeles. Blandon and Menendez were Nicaraguans who smuggled drugs into the U.S. and supplied dealers like Ross. The series discussed primarily Blandon and Menendez and their relationship with the Contras and the CIA and highlighted the failure of law enforcement agencies to successfully prosecute them and stated that this was largely due to their Contra and CIA connections. Think about that. So local law enforcement not getting any success going after these fucking big dogs.
And some of them reporting me like, what the fuck's up with these guys? They must be like, they must be informants or something. Like, why can't we touch them? Like they were like shocked at like, they couldn't get these guys because some of the law enforcement knew about it. Right.
It also discussed the social effects of the crack trade, noting that it had a disparate effect on the African Americans, asking why crack became so prevalent in Black communities of Los Angeles, disparities in the treatment of Black and white traffickers in the justice system, contrasting the treatment of Blandon and Ross after their arrest for drug trafficking, because Blandon cooperated with the Drug Enforcement Agency. He spent 28 months in prison, became a paid government informant, and received permanent residence status. So he's a snitch. Ross also released early after cooperating in an investigation of police corruption, but was rearrested a few months later in a sting operation arranged with Blandon's help. The article suggests that this was in retribution for Ross's testimony in the corruption case.
Yeah, because Ross was like, yeah, I work for the CIA. Yeah, he's totally. Like, I'm directly working with the CIA.
And one of the cool things
said in interviews
about this three-part article too is like this article attracted hundreds of thousands of readers to the newspaper at the time. But it also was kind of the first article that went viral because it was released. It was one of the first things that was released on like a newspaper and on the computer at the same time on the internet.
Yeah. So it really took off. Like it was widespread.
But one of the more controversial aspects of that is the fact that it was accompanied by a picture of a man smoking crack under the CIA seal.
And that's what, I mean, and that was editors at the San Jose Mercury News. Gary Webb never, he didn't put that picture with it. They did. But again, in his articles, he alludes to that fact. He doesn't say that they're doing this. He's saying that either they have a hand or they're looking the other way or they're incompetent, basically, because it's right under their nose. And basically, the San Jose Mercury News and stuff, it's a small news outlet. Gary Webb he's not a huge journalist. You know what I mean?
Well,
like
he was a Pulitzer Prize winner at this time.
But they just don't have the funds to like follow through with this story. So this story
was
meant,
small Bay Area newspaper, right?
Like, yeah.
It's
not, so this story was meant to lay the grounds for basically their hopes was a big network, because this is a fucking huge story, would pick up this investigation and then run with it, right? And then see it to the end.
Wouldn't the big news organizations see this and use it as an opportunity to be like, wow, we should look into this as well, right? Like this Gary Webb guy might be onto something. Maybe we should do it. Or would they use this as an opportunity to fucking absolutely attack and dismantle Gary Webb as a human being?
They took the latter. They systematically destroyed Gary Webb. I mean, bits in the article, they attacked his saying that he was exaggerating claims, and the San Jose Mercury News had to come out and say like, you know, some of the money figures that we took were based on what we knew. And we shouldn't have stated as fact. It was just based on our rough estimates. Right. So they're like, he got lambasted.
But the New York Times assigned no fewer than 17 reporters to pick apart Webb's reporting. One reporter referred to the team as the Get Gary Webb team, stated they were going to take away his Pulitzer Prize.
Yeah.
And right? So you have all these people that are fucking focusing. Either there was a lot of people that came out, like Maxine Waters, is that the congresswoman?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Came out, kind of had Gary's back. He had a few different people that had his back, but a lot of these major news outlets were attacking him. So you have people either defending Gary or condemning him. And at this entire time, they're focusing on him as a person and not the fucking, what the CIA is doing.
Right? And the CIA is in the back and being like,
perfect.
Perfect. Nailed it. That's how it's done, boys. That's how you do a cover up. They absolutely crucified this guy. He couldn't find work.
Well, unfortunately, in 1997, the Mercury News executive editor, Jerry Sipos, backed away from the story, calling it flawed in an editorial. Sipos said that the paper did not have proof that top CIA officials knew about the connection between the LA drug tag and the Contras, so basically your own editor is coming out against you.
Well, because of the backlash, right? Like
exactly.
We've seen
the guy
everything.
Was seen when Gary Webb released this article. They have they're having a company party to celebrate because it's getting so much fucking news and everything. And Sipos shows up in an army helmet, being like, "We're ready to fight."
Yeah,
like we got Gary's back, and it's like all of a sudden he's fucking turncoating the poor bastard.
Yeah, and I mean, like they systematically destroyed his credibility, destroyed his life. He couldn't work. He couldn't do what he wanted
to do. They demoted him.
He couldn't.
He was writing obituaries.
He ended up resigning from the San Jose Mercury News, and you know that was kind of the end of the story. Like he got
well, he wrote a book after resigning.
Yeah. Right. And in 98 that he wrote the book, The Dark Alliance?
Dark Alliance.
I mean, that was just the articles put into book form.
It's a book form. He still technically wrote a book, right?
And then we have in 1998, the CIA Inspector General's report. Basically, they come out and they'd be like, you know what? He wasn't lying. It's like, yeah, a lot of that wasn't not true. Can I say that? Right? Like legit, like just kind of like openly admit to like that they, you know, a lot of the aspects were, you know, were factually true, but, you know, they didn't have any direct involvement in drug trafficking. But, you know, maybe they turned the heads of some local law enforcement, you know, they kept some routes free and clear for these drug trades to happen so that the Contras could be funded. Yeah, maybe. Maybe we did a little bit of that. No big deal. So it's like you would think that...
Didn't he testify against... the report said something to the fact like they couldn't support all this. They would do this and this and this, but they would not support... Or it was omitted. That's what it was. Like it was omitted that they would not support drug trafficking.
Yeah.
So they're like, well, what about drug trafficking?
Yeah, there was memorandum of understanding. There's an MOU that was circulated through the CIA and it essentially said, these are the actions that you can and cannot do while in the field. Like these are the things that you have to report. And then, you know, conveniently drug trafficking was like at first was left out. And then when somebody pointed it out, they're like, well,
whatever it takes.
Like, yeah.
So they never, they never really admit to it, but they say like, well, it wasn't in the rule book. All right. We didn't break any rules. It wasn't in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. If it wasn't directly interfering into your thing, it's like, well, if it wasn't like hindering you or whatever, you're just supposed to kind of not really acknowledge that it's happening. Cause I mean, if you're involved in some of these shady dealings with these, with counter-revolutionary groups, you're going to be, of course, you're like, where are you getting your guys' money from? And it's like a lot of it's probably going to be from illegal activities, if not just drug trafficking, then other types of trafficking, probably human, and other other places, even though a lot of the Sandinistas, the anti-Sandinistas, the Contras, like their funding actually came from private individuals, people who supported their things. And then plus like just straight up U.S. funding is like a majority.
Yeah, the CIA is like, make up some names, make donations.
I mean, it's possible. I haven't looked into it, but it's just like they just put into numbers in there. But the
we keep getting all these donations from some guy named Charles Ian Anderson. I don't understand. I'm fucking weird.
the thing that blows my mind because we didn't know and have the data about like how devastating addiction issues are and, you know, crack cocaine could be because it's like we have generational issues now because of that. And it's like, if you're just like, not preventing it, but like allowing it to happen under your nose. I'm like, man, that is like they're indirectly responsible for so many fucking deaths.
Well, yeah, you're allowing it to happen for for big money. Follow the money.
Yeah, right. And it's again, you know, technically nothing wrong, but like it just feels so fucking corrupt and so against dirty. Your own country. Like it feels so fucking not like bad.
Well, come on. It's not like they were crazy. Fucking brainwashing people and all of that. Yeah, that's true. Right? Like, it's not so bad.
Yeah, why are you surprised? Now this story, especially of Gary Webb, if we follow his kind of path, a lot of people are interested in Gary Webb because in 2004, Gary Webb dies of two gunshot wounds to the head. Now it's labeled a suicide, but conspiracy theorists online and stuff point to Gary wrote these. He was actively, you know, against the CIA, kind of took on the government, lost. And this was the final, you know, they whacked him, basically.
The two shots, they whacked him.
Yeah. So oddly enough, his death was reported by a moving company that he'd hired. He was moving out of his house because he had to downsize due to the fact that his career was fucking...
irrevocably fucking tarnished and destroyed. So he's selling his house to move back in with his mom at the time. They arrived at his house and they saw a note on his door saying, please don't come in, call 911 and ask for an ambulance. So when people kind of got into his house, they found all his awards box near his body, prearranged cremation certificate and social insurance card laid out on a table. He put his keys to his cars and his motorcycle in an envelope and addressed it to his oldest son. And in a trash bin, they found a framed quote that read, there should be no fetters on reports, nor must they tamper with the truth, but give light that people will find their own way.
And a lot of people look at this scene, and the reason why they point to conspiracy theory is because it's been labeled as suicide, but Gary was, you know, had two gunshot wounds to the head. So a lot of people point to that as being like, well, hey, maybe this was some sort of assassination attempt
It was one through the jaw.
The first one exited his left cheek.
Yeah.
And the other one hit a main artery in his brain. I think it's important. Like a lot of people say, because there was two gunshots. Like, I think it's important to stress the fact that he was clinically depressed, divorced, yeah, unemployed. His ex-wife at the time said like he had multiple motorcycle accidents that she deemed like were purposeful.
He's at rock bottom.
He was trying to hurt himself.
Yeah. Yeah. And to just say another thing, like, you know, I get why people say that, and there's plenty of historical incidents where people shooting themselves twice, not getting it right, finishing it. It doesn't happen all the time.
They did a study out of 138 clearly defined gunshot suicides, which were autopsies. 11 persons, 8%, fired two or more shots to the body. Yeah. Of these 11, five cases involved two gunshots to the head. So, I mean, it does happen, but it's quite rare. Like, speaking from experience of being to these, like a lot of times, like the first gunshot that he talks about, it sounds like a lot of times when people are unsuccessful in doing that, they tend to pull away at the last minute, right? Which could explain the gunshot through the mouth initially. I know where Braden's going with this, and I agree, like this guy's at rock bottom, even like that. And I know that supposedly that this does happen. Like to fucking blow a hole through your face and then have the wherewithal to be able to, like, you think about being shot in the face and being completely and utterly disoriented, and then
it is with a 38 as well. So it's like it's a bigger gun. I wasn't sure if it was a smaller one.
It's a large caliber weapon, blowing a hole in your face and then grabbing that same one with a hole in your face and shooting yourself again.
I would like to see.
It does happen, but I believe that.
Yeah, but when they give that percentage, like, so two wounds to the head, does that mean like, are some of the wounds like just a graze, like they actually did really pull away?
First one is behind the ear and out the jaw, and then second one is through the temple.
No.
That's what I'm saying. That they do, and when they count two gunshot wounds to the head, does that mean like they actually did pull away and it just like grazed forehead or like it didn't actually like was
oh, okay,
like a devastating wound, I guess you would say?
I don't think it.
So that's what I mean. So
that,
was there eight of those where someone didn't like, more or less kind of skin themselves or something? Two wounds, technically two wounds, but still considered the same.
Temporal regions are the most commonly affected regions.
Dude, looking at this run and reading at it surface level, Gary snitches on CIA, ends up dead, two gunshot wounds to the head, labeled suicide. When you read that, I go like the conspiracy theorist
of conspiracy.
I go, 100%. Oh shit, they fucking off this guy. But then when you look at this case, and this is my belief, the CIA didn't have to, man. They've ruined this. They systematically,
he was already with toast.
Them and their influence ruined this fucking guy's life.
They didn't have to kill him.
If he's not assassinated by, it doesn't matter to me.
Assassinated his career and his life.
You know what this is?
They're involved. They are directly linked to his death, whether they were actively involved and shot him in the head or he shot himself. They were the catalyst that led to this.
Accomplice to murder.
Yeah. It's like they systemized, like they didn't have to do anything. They fucking ruined this guy. To me, it's like, what did we, like, I couldn't figure out why they, like, you know what? It's fucking, you know, like 8 years, 6 years after, you know, we've made it. Let's go get this guy now. He's already down in the dumps. Let's finish him off. Like,
well, one of the things that I did read about that when I got deep into the Reddit pages, where somebody brought up the fact that around the time of his death, Gary's story was resurfacing due to the post 9/11 climate. With the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan and like the opium issues with fucking Afghanistan. But like it, you look at everything and like that, remember his old editor, that Sipos guy, right after he came out against him, he ended up getting a fucking promotion to running his own fucking parent paper company. Like,
it's interesting because like the parallels that I saw with this is like when you remember the Twitter files leaking, right? And some of the ones that were leaked was that three-letter agencies were directly contacting engineers at Twitter and being like, we need you to do X, Y, and Z. Suppress this story, block these stories, do this. And this social media company was just being like, yeah, like no fucking problem. No problem at all. We'll do it. And it's crazy to me because what I think that we saw in this case was just one of the first ever, like they had that cover-up playbook down pat, like attack the person. They had influence in all the major, you know, all these major news are funded, right? By politically funded and stuff by donors and stuff and lead one way or another, right? That's why, right? They just got flex, been like, hey, don't run this. Fuck Gary. And I've been a big fuck Gary guy my whole life. Right, everyone knows that about me, but this is he's the exception to the rule. He got unjustly fucked over for just writing a story that was a lot of it factually true.
Are you throwing back to that man on the bus you one time described way back in the day?
Yeah, old Mongol Gary. Mongol Gary, yeah, yeah,
that's canon. That's not, yeah, that's there.
That's his name. It's not hate speech, that's his name.
Yeah, that's his name.
That's his name.
So go back, it's not me. That's his name. So it's interesting to see the other dark turns. I think that like when I look at this, I'm going like these motherfuckers, you know, could have stopped some of these addiction issues. Like it's just like it, to me, I'm like it's crazy how much was funneled in to fund a fucking another country's war, right? And ruin lives at home
now, like
to fund this.
Like I'm not super familiar with that, with the whole history of that drug trade at that time, but who is accredited then with, if it's not, say the CIA has nothing to do with it, zero, who is accredited with smuggling? Was there ever like a big bust? The
Colombian drug lords.
Just Colombia?
Cartels existed. Yeah. Drug cartels.
That's what I mean. So that we know that people are smuggling, these people are down there. How
most
can
of
not
it's attributed to a Cuban named Tony Montana.
And we're just, well, the thing is like we know about them, but it's the fact that it's like, you know of these things and at some points you could stop them, but you go, no, because we know this money is going to get
people are getting money somewhere, everywhere.
Yeah. Right? Like this is going to fund our interests.
You scratch our back, we'll scratch your back.
Okay. Yeah. So go ahead. This is where you go. Right? Like that, and that's where kind of my brain goes. I was like, is there CIA operatives, you know, directly giving information of where to smuggle drugs in, where to bring drugs in? Where's going to be free, or are they knowing the routes and then just going like, and I don't look there Sundays. So, right. Like they say they weren't directly involved, but you know, you can be quite indirectly involved in, getting drugs over the border in any of these communities. So,
well, it's smart too, because it's like, you've created this gigantic industry where you can farm a win whenever you want one. Like, you know, we need morale. We need to distract people. Let's get a big drug bust.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, like, or you're one you're not working with, right? You're like, these ones over here coming in, we are not working with them. So we are not going to turn a blind eye to these.
The competition will probably rat on them.
Yeah.
Like the ones you're working with will probably be like, hey, listen,
dude, 100%. I never even thought about that. Like you think about fucking freeway Rick Ross. He was probably snitching on other dealers that were getting picked up so he could have free and clear run this stuff in more efficiently.
Yeah.
Right? Like he was literally working under government protection.
Well, the CIA has been doing this. Like a fucking white boy Rick. Look what happened to white boy Rick. Like, fucking.
Yeah. Like, I mean, there's tons of stories of the CIA, you know, doing whatever it takes.
And hashtag a lot of whatever the times, it takes.
Sometimes it seems like whatever it takes is at the expense of...
That's what the case file should be. It should be CIA, drugs, and whatever it takes.
Whatever it takes.
Because it seems like a lot of these times it's like the baseline of people of who it does affect is like poor, impoverished, and minorities is like who it like... It's like they're like, yeah, whatever it takes.
Yeah, they got it shitty enough. Who cares? What are they going to...
Yeah, as long as it stays in the inner city. Right, like it's crazy, but like I think that this is, you've indirectly involved yourself in the addiction issues that we now see today and the problems we see today. Aided, exactly.
Had to, it started somewhere.
But it then makes me think of like, it's like, cause we see copious amounts of fentanyl and stuff, just like cruising into borders and stuff and like no issues. And it's like, in 10 years, are we going to find out that there were some shady dealings of this stuff getting across? Where I was like, what's being funded? You know what I mean? It makes you question everything. It's hard to fucking trust these people.
Now, I got a question, Dan. This is for maybe more for Dan. Is the CIA, other than like the actual military, the only like agency it's evolved outside of the United States?
Oh, you have other things like depending on what the case has to do with. I mean, you have the CIA, NSA. There's a couple of, like National Security Council. There's a couple other alphabet agencies that.
Yeah, NSA is just peeping toms though.
It's like but I'm saying like the involved and the DEA. Technically, DEA can work in conjunction with other countries and stuff like that. So it's like
they boots on the ground, potentially undercover in other countries.
Yeah, DEA.
Like that kind of stuff. DEA. There's cases that are eerily similar to this. It's just DEA, not CIA.
So like, yeah, there are other organizations that can work outside. Just because I asked this, because
the only thing you ever see around is it's always CIA over in this country. CIA, CIA. Well, not necessarily the headline, just the talk. It's always the CIA spy. I was just wondering.
Oh, well, they're the big spooky guys. Like the CIA carries that
The amount of propaganda that goes into these agencies being always the good guys is unbelievable.
So the CIA like are the worst at hiding it. If all these other alphabet agencies don't ever get,
I don't even want to start to dig into what the MIB's been.
Gary DeVore, buddy, look up the story. We should do one on it. Screenwriter murdered.
Screenwriter murdered.
Well, there's another a reason Gary? Why all these there's another Gary. Maybe they just have a thing for Gary's.
Hate Gary.
Yeah.
What? I mean, there's a reason why the fucking intelligence agencies and everything are always the heroes in all these fucking TV shows that we're forced to watch.
A little bit of a what's that? What's that operation? Operation Mockingbird, where they instill CIA agents supposedly into film and TV and news.
Isn't there a story where the CIA is like owns the copyright to one of the most successful songs?
I don't know.
That sounds familiar, that sounds familiar about something.
Yeah. I actually think then they're like behind it. It's weird. Anyway, we'll get it.
Behind
it's,
everything. It's, they're behind social media.
Wind of change.
Is that what it is?
Maybe.
It's the story of Gary Webb. Rare, yes. Suspicious, sure. If you're into conspiracies, 100%, it has all the makings. But when you look into it, you go, "Why? They already ruined this guy. They like ruined his life. They're already involved in his death. Either way, it doesn't matter. They're involved. So it's just crazy. It's crazy what these, and people forget.
Don't do. So that's why the moral here. Of the story is: don't try and do any good journalism. Because it may come back to
Exactly.
Well, just don't write about the CIA.
Yeah. Don't write about the CIA. Don't mind your own business.
Don't do whatever it takes.
Puff pieces, baby. that's the moral of this story. That's a fun case file. Zell, do we have a theorite of the week?
We did. You had it.
You have it? I have it up. This is a good one. You know what? Sometimes all you got to do, head over to a UFO festival or a cool festival, send us a picture, and you get the Theory of the Week. This Scott Martin was at the Kecksburg UFO Festival in PA.
That's cool. Dope.
So it's, I actually just closed the window by accident, but he was there to send a picture of the little bell there, a little acorn looking UFO.
The Glocka.
Yeah, the Glocka. Who knows what it was? Thanks for sending that in. You're the theory of the week. Hope it was fun. Let us know if you see this. I'm kind of interested how it was. I'd love to get to more, but it's a little difficult up in Canada. We only get some roving fucking weird Bigfoot ones. Yeah. Not that they're bad.
There was a Bigfoot one in Kelowna, actually, I think we could have went to. There?
Yeah, it's the same
really?
Guy, Tom Saweed. I could have him on. He's just he's an interesting guy. He's an interesting cat. We could have him on. He would come on instantly. I've talked to him numerous times. He was one of the only people interested in my Bigfoot photos.
I mean, if we had the skull lion on, we could probably have this guy on.
Yeah.
Probably make it work.
Well, no, he would. He already, because I kind of told him when I was like, could I set up a merch booth at your, and we were kind of going back and forth. Nice guy. But he does a lot of goddamn Bigfoot festivals. It's the same stuff. It's not a lot of interesting.
Well, hey, buddy, supply and demand. People are asking for him. He's got to do them.
People are seeing him. They want him. People, they want to come together and talk about him. So he had the Bindernagel Festival, and then he had one in Merritt, and then he was probably involved in the one in Kelowna. He's got a Bigfoot. Listen to this one. This one's wild. Bigfoot Alaskan cruise.
What?
So you all pay.
Oh, that sounds like a pod trip. That sounds like a pod trip for sure.
Support a fishing boat, probably.
Because if you're going to find Bigfoot, it's going to be out on the water.
On a cruise. Well, yeah, and then, but what everyone does is what I was reading the chats and stuff is they want you to bring like telephoto lenses, telescopes, so you can watch the coastline the entire time.
Plot twist. Bigfoot is on the cruise. Like you're taking pictures of the coastline. And you're like, this guy next to me is really tall and really hairy.
Yeah.
Then you just pay. No, then that, oh, this is perfect. It's a perfect business idea. Because then you pay someone to kind of give a little glimpse that they're Bigfoot on the beach. Get a couple photos, spark a little interest. Perfect business.
Are you implying that people would hoax Bigfoot?
100%.
That's disgusting.
For money?
Disgusting.
And fame?
Yeah.
Well, what's his name? Coyote Peterson. He's gonna hear this. He's gonna fucking start. He's gonna start it up.
Fuck that guy.
Fuck Coyote Peterson. He sucked my ass. That guy.
Definitely suck my ass.
And listen, you still got lots of time to get your logo in for our logo contest. We're looking for a new logo. First place was $300. Second place was 200. And third place was first.
I think that's what we 100. Offered. Definitely close.
And
you're getting money.
And fourth place, you get jack shit because nothing pays for fourth. But send us in. Cool. Like we've gotten a couple, some really cool ones. I'm telling you right now, a winner has not been picked. Right? Winner has not been picked. So definitely keep sending them in. All we're looking for, you see the logo right behind me? The little, our simplistic logo? Incorporate that somewhere in it. Right? And remember, it's a podcast logo. Some people have sent some fucking cool logos and I'm like, well, that's a shirt for sure.
Yeah.
Not necessarily a logo for the show, but fucking super dope.
Good shit. And if you're not supporting the show and you want to help your boys out, get early access to the case file ad-free, all the bonus stuff, you got to go to alientheorist.com, hit the support tab, sign up on Supercast or Patreon. Get that classified feed. This week's new supporters, we have Viet. Diane?
Gwyn?
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 That's Vietnamese.
Yeah.
Yeah, she, NGUYEN.
Really?
I think she lives near me, yeah.
Oh, cool. Paul Anar. Now, what is it? Al Jordanson.
Zell's so cautious to read because he doesn't know if people are trying to punk him or not. So he's like, is this a regular name or a fucked up name? Well,
this one's got accents in it and shit. Anor Abjornsson.
Jornsson.
Oh, yeah, that's a good Nordic name.
That sounds like you should be able to pronounce that shit for sure.
Yeah. What the fuck?
That sounds like your native tongue, buddy.
Let's go.
Lee Alfana. Aaron. Ronalicious Pondalicious.
Oh, yeah.
Jared Birch. Gavin G. A $50 per month pledge, top tier by the real clown baby. Hell yeah.
Not the fake one,
the real one.
Yeah. And OG clown baby.
Last but not least, we got Rick Buss.
Hate that fake ass clown baby.
That's it.
All right, and as we always say at the end of these things, keep those eyes from the skies.